Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Another great show for you this week on Dublin's Talking Sport. George McDonagh previews the Cheltenham Festival and picks out a few tasty tips for us this week, and hopefully a couple of winners as well as that. Victor Costello previews the huge game against England in the Six Nations Championship as we look at where Ireland can attack England and hopefully get victory over them. Declan Drake gives us all of his latest thoughts on the Dubs, and of course we spoke to Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call podcast to review the SSE Airtricity Week. So make sure you download the show now wherever you get your podcasts. Turning our attention to SSE Airtricity League now. In a moment, I'm going to be talking to the one and only Alan Cawley. But last night saw Shamrock Rovers take on Bowes and come out on top. But Keith Long caught up with Declan Drake after the game. Let's have a quick listen to what he had to say about the match.
Declan, we shouldn't be standing here talking about decisions in games every week. You know, the reality is the referee is the man on the spot. He's in a great position to see it. He does have assistants on the side that need to help the referees, and in some cases they do, in other cases they don't. So tonight was one of those where the referee made the decision. In my opinion, it's the wrong decision. We should have a penalty, and we're trying to raise all standards in the league, and we're trying to improve the league. There's lots of positivity around the league. Look at the full house here tonight. I think we deserve maybe a little bit better. I don't want to be harsh on Rob, but tonight. But we've come away from here without a point, without getting a penalty that I felt we certainly deserved. So.
Morning, Alan. Frustration there in Keith Long's voice. You can hear it.
Yeah, good morning, Reggie. I was at the match myself, and of course, Keith feels hard done by and feels aggrieved. My initial reaction to that incident was that it was a penalty as well. I felt that Chris Twardek was the wrong side of Lee Grace, and you have seen them given. I felt it was a penalty on the night. I wouldn't mind seeing it back, but I think that frustration stems also from the fact that they were missing Promise Amachira, who got sent off very harshly last week, which meant he was suspended for the game last night, and they really missed him in the match. Bohemians did okay on the night, Reggie, but they didn't do enough to maybe come away with that point, as Keith said. He obviously feels aggrieved about the penalty incident, but overall, I felt Shamrock Rovers always were in control of the game, even though Bowes had a lot of possession, particularly after Shamrock Rovers scored and in the second half. But a lot of it was huffing and puffing without creating any clear-cut chances, and I always felt Shamrock Rovers had them in full control. And largely down to the fact that they had no physical presence up front. They really missed Promise Amachira last night. There was a young lad playing who was on loan, Ryan Cassidy, and it was a big ask and a big game for him to come into, and he was feeding off scraps for the majority of the match. So overall, I think Shamrock Rovers deserved the win, but I do understand where Keith Long is coming from with the penalty incident.
Okay, well, Declan spoke to Stephen Bradley as well, so just let's have a listen to what he said.
I played some really good football, and then second half we had to manage the game and show a different side to us, and we did that really well. There was no real danger in the second half. We gave up a bit of territory, a bit of possession, but there was no danger. We managed the game really well second half.
When you're a team that's been together and played in big games and won things together, you understand how to manage games like that. And the second half, we understood how to manage it and seeing the game out fairly comfortable. We possibly should have added one or two with Danny's chance at the end and Aaron Green's chance at the end. But overall, delighted with the 3 points.
Yeah, you can hear it there. So it sounded like they were in control. I didn't see the game itself, but it does sound like, from what you've said and from what Stephen has said there, okay, the penalty shout might have been legitimate, but other than that, they were in control of the match.
Yeah, it's rare you hear me and Stephen Bradley agreeing on things, right? But he summed it up very well there, to be fair, and that's exactly what I had just said to you in the previous answer. Yeah. So they did manage it quite well. Bohemians did have a lot of ball and a lot of territory, as Bradley said, but they never really created any clear-cut chances, or they never really looked like creating a clear-cut chance. That would have been even more of a worry, Reggie. Stephen Mallon was disappointing with the lack of end product. As I said, they lacked a real physical presence up top, with Promise not playing, because he would have offered them that, and he would have been a real threat in behind with his pace and his power. So they did miss him. I felt Bohemians did okay, but okay is not good enough if you're going to Tala at home of the champions, because once they scored and they were in control, they probably, as he said himself, they could have added, there was a late chance with Aaron Green and Mandrew had a chance as well. But overall, I do think Shamrock Rovers deserved the 3 points.
Yeah, okay. Well, we move on then to Pats, who had a good win, and they're sitting there on the same points as Shamrock Rovers on 9 points, and an okay start to the season for them, no doubt. 2-0 away to Finn Harps. I know Finn Harps are the poorest of all the teams in the league, but it's still a good win to go away and get a result up there.
Yeah, it's a tough place, obviously, as we all know. And it was a great win for St. Pat's, especially coming off the back, Reggie, of beating Shamrock Rovers last week. It would have been a disaster had they gone up to Finn Harps and not capitalised on that great result they had last week. So to come away with a 2-0 victory, I think Tim Clancy will be over the moon and delighted. And it just sets them up nicely, because after the good start that they had, they obviously lost two games in quick succession over the one weekend against Bohemians and Sligo Rovers, and they would have been disappointed with that. But they bounced back last Friday with a great win. I was at the match against Shamrock Rovers. So to follow that up with a good win against Finn Harps, Clancy will be delighted.
Sligo, the other team, I know you know well, one of your own, but they've only played 4 games and they're sitting in third place, 8 points. We said this last year about them as well. Like, they're, I don't want to say they kind of surprise me every year, but they're not one of the teams that you expect to be battling as well as they do every year and really pushing to be up there at that, leading the league. You know, it's amazing how the performance they can pull out, especially 3-0 away to Drogheda.
Yeah, they've had a brilliant start, Reggie, and I would agree with a lot of that, really, especially with the off-season, because I felt the recruitment wasn't great. No real kind of standout signings as such, but they've had a brilliant start, and to go to draw to win 3-0, they're unbeaten now. They're playing Finn Harps on Monday night at home. You would fancy them to maybe get a victory there. And that would be, after 5 games on 11 points, if they were to win, you'd be over the moon with that start. And Liam Buckley will be, absolutely. I know the fans are excited by the team so far as well. So it's been a brilliant start for them, and hopefully they can maintain it. But if you think last year as well, Reggie, they got off to a brilliant start, and after 15 games, they were sitting top of the league.
Yep.
And then the second part of the season, it just petered out, and they were lucky enough just to get Europe at the end of the season. So they won't want that to happen. So I wouldn't be getting too carried away yet.
Sorry for cutting across, but does that come from maybe the lack of resources and strength and depth of players when the injuries come, when the latter part of the season kicks in? Is that where they have their failing?
I'm not so sure, Reggie. Okay. I think it's a mentality thing, to be honest with you, because they're a full-time setup. They've been a full-time club for many years now. They've brilliant resources at the club. The players are well looked after. They had a good enough squad, I felt, last year to maintain that challenge.
Okay.
Not as good as the Shamrock Rovers squad, but certainly a squad to maintain a better fight of what they did. They fell away totally in the second part of the season. Hmm. They went at one stage 10 games without a win. So that just tells you how much their form kind of dipped in that second part of the season. But they've had a brilliant start. But that's all it is at the moment, is a start. The question is, can they maintain it? But I'm sure Liam Buckley will be over the moon. And to go to Drogheda, because Drogheda had a good win last week themselves against UCD, and they scored 4 goals. So to keep them scoreless, to score 3 goals, without a couple of key players missing as well, Greg Bulger didn't start. So I think Liam Buckley will be over the moon with the start they've had.
Okay, very good. Now, Shelburne, Damien Duff, he'll be happy as well with the spirit his team showed, because they went a goal down to Dundalk in that game, but they kept battling away and managed to pull back and make it 1-1. So although you'd like to be winning your games at home, we'd probably be happy with the spirit they showed.
Yeah, because Dundalk have been unbeaten so far as well, Reggie. They've had a good start, something similar to what I was saying about Sligo. So to be a goal down at home, I think they've showed a lot of character to come back into that game and obviously get the penalty and equalise. So I'm sure Duff will be delighted with that. They're very much work in progress, Shelburne. Obviously, it's a brand new squad, a huge turnover of players in the off-season. I know there's a lot of hype around the club at the moment, and especially with Duff in charge. But if they're just to maintain their position in the league, Reggie, and finish somewhere mid-table and build on that, I think they'll be over the moon with the season. So, as I say, they're very much a work in progress. They're plucky and determined, hard-working team. They lack a bit of star quality, but as I say, they're only new to the division and they're very much a work in progress, and they'll get better as the season goes on as well. So that's a big point, coming back from a goal down against Dundalk to get the equaliser. I think he'd be delighted with that, Duff.
Yeah, okay. Quickly across the water, I spoke to Ken about it earlier on. Spurs, not a bad bit of form for them at the moment, taking on United at 5:30 today. And the way United are going at the moment, you nearly fancy Spurs to get that win in Old Trafford.
Yeah, I wouldn't fancy United against anyone, Reggie. Yeah. And I've been saying that for a long time now. You couldn't fancy them because you just don't know what you're going to get out of them from one week to the next. And there's obviously issues left, right and centre at the club. So how could anybody fancy them, no matter who they're playing against? And certainly Spurs are coming into the game with their tails up. Brilliant win against Everton during the week. Free flowing, scoring goals. Kane looks like he's back on song the last few weeks. He's been absolutely electric. Son as well. So I would fancy Spurs big time in that, to be honest with you, Reg.
Okay, tell me, who have you got on your podcast this week?
We're hoping to have Jimmy Brown made a move in the off-season over to Blackburn, and he's just signed an extended contract, doing really well at Blackburn. Young player who was at Drogheda, Reggie, so we're hoping to speak to him on Tuesday.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, look forward to hearing that one indeed. And finally, quick word, PSG. I know you're big fans of them. They failed miserably during the week, didn't they?
If anyone, no one does collapses like PSG do collapses. It was unbelievable. At half time, I was setting up the semi-final lineup and how far they're going to go and everything. And all of a sudden, then the mistake from the goalkeeper. And to be fair to Real Madrid, I thought they were good in the second half, but PSG played right into their hands and allowed them back into the game. It was madness, really, the collapse. But we've seen it before with them. And when you're managing personalities and egos, I feel sorry for Pochettino because they're unmanageable, those fellas. The likes of that Neymar, I couldn't imagine being in a dressing room with him. Like, you know, he's so selfish and self-absorbing. Even Messi went missing in the second half as well. So I felt a little bit for Mbappe. He was the only one carrying the fight to them, really. Yeah. But I doubt he'll stay there any longer. And as I say, Pochettino, I think, is a good manager, but you couldn't manage that group. They're impossible, I'd say, to manage.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, look, you enjoy the weekend. Enjoy all the sport. Enjoy the rugby later on if you're going to watch it. And we'll catch up again.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Time to turn our attention to rugby now. And I'm delighted to be joined on the line by former Irish international Victor Coslog. Morning, Victor. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. Great, thanks.
Good, good. I know we were texting last night. I know you were watching that match, the Welsh game. It was a hell of a game, it has to be said. I thought France were going to hammer Wales, but in one sense. But then I also knew how difficult and awkward they can be at home. They put up a good performance and they almost did us a favour.
And ironically, the French team were beaten by a Welshman, Sean Edwards, in the stadium. Mm. I thought it was a fantastic display for a Six Nations. We spoke earlier in the season about how important the Six Nations is post-COVID. And so far, it has not disappointed. It was a fantastic match to watch. I really didn't see the Welsh getting through at all, and that's a testament to where this French team are. Normally, they would have, you know, folded a tent with that amount of pressure in the past, and they were very resilient, very, very resilient. And you can see a lot of picks of Sean Edwards there. This is his big moment, and he's really built a great, great side with that defence. And if you go back all the way to World Cups in the past, some of the great coaches will tell you that they win World Cups with great defences, and that's a serious start for France this year, a year out. And I can't see England stopping them next week. But what a great performance, a great spectacle, and great for the game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It was a brilliant match. But I have to give credit to Wales because, you know, they're a bit of a basket case in Welsh rugby. Their provinces are doing terrible. They seem to be constantly throwing out feelers about, you know, joining an Anglo league and crisis in the clubs and no money and everything else. And you'd wonder how in the name of God they're able to pull together any sort of a national team with some cohesion. But once they put on that red jersey and they go out there, they battle for every single thing they had, and they put on a great display.
Yeah, I mean, this Six Nations has been good for them because they started off, they were quite poor. I mean, I know you've got a couple of old boys there, bigger on the side, but, you know, you've got a lot of young talent coming through. So if you're a Welsh, you'd look at that and say there is a bit of a resurgence going on. I mean, they do play much better in Principality Stadium for their country rather than in the provinces and the clubs. And that's something they'll have to sort out and have indeed tried to sort out over a long time now and probably going nowhere. But for the Welsh Union itself, they do perform, and the trajectory from their first game, their performances have improved. They haven't quite got there. They haven't had, like, you know, in the past, many Irish teams have gone over there and lost in the last few minutes because they're so competitive right for the 80 minutes in that stadium. They don't travel well, like the French used to not travel well at the moment, but there are green shoots. I mean, there's some fantastic players, young players that are coming through. They're probably not getting the same exposure to competitive rugby through the clubs, but they are international level. So for them, I think there is a bit of hope, certainly in their performances last night, for sure.
Okay, let's move on to the Irish game. We're all very, very excited about this one. I can't wait for quarter to five this evening. As things stand, we have to win. We have no other option if we're to be in with any chance of catching France. We're sitting on 11 points. France are on 18. We have the game in hand. We're away to England. Never an easy thing to do. You and I both know how difficult that is, although we've managed to get across the line there too. We're favourites, and I'm not quite sure that we should be. I don't know what your thoughts on it are.
Yeah, it's a strange one, because if you go back to 2018, we were really in top form and we did a lot of momentum, and that was the final game. And the English didn't actually take any notice of that. So we really played well that day, and the game was over probably after 30 minutes, and some fine performances individually as well as the team. And of course, we all know what happened a year later. The team went into a decline. This time, the English are kind of ready for us, and that doesn't normally happen. They have an air of arrogance and confidence, no matter how well they're doing in Twickenham. But I think this time they will have that. They're always a couple of inches higher and stronger when they run out in Twickenham, but they are aware of Ireland, and that's kind of a new entity for them, I believe. And I think that's where Ireland are going to get a surprise. We, on the other hand, we spoke about before this competition, Reg, we said this is the game that could be tricky. I don't think we've shown the right momentum. I mean, yes, we performed well against France after winning comprehensively against Wales. The Italian game was a real confusing one. I'm not convinced you could take anything or draw anything from that game to warrant confidence going into this game. So it's a really hard one to call. And you're right when it comes to favourites. You know, on the face of it, you go, oh, well, Ireland, you know, there'd be great momentum in the autumn internationals and we beat Wales well. But, like, realistically, this is a 50-50 game. And as we saw last night, winning their home games, the English have got their back against the wall here. They don't have a great team, but they've got passion and pride, and they're in their home territory. They're going to be very, very hard to beat here. That's not saying that Ireland can't beat them, but it's going to be a very tough game.
I think it's good to put a bit of reality on it, because, you know, the three times that we've played in Twickenham, we've lost. That they're the facts. In November 2020, we lost 18-7. In February 2020, we lost 24-12. And in August 2019, we lost 57 points to 15. We were hammered. So, you know, it's like important that we get our listeners to get a bit of context on this, because I'm going around the place and everyone's going, yeah, we're going to beat England. England are rubbish. They're far from rubbish. They're a good side. They can play the game. Now, there's a couple of question marks maybe around them that wouldn't have been there before, and I'm not sure. I just don't know yet about Marcus Smith at 10. Do you think he's the real deal, or how do you feel about him?
I think he's a real deal. I don't think he's much outside him. I think it'll be a great battle old versus young with himself and Sexton, and I think that could be end up being a serious part of the game. Will he try and prove himself against Sexton, who's all the accolades? You mentioned the teams before. Yes, we have not had recent success over there, but it was a much different English sides we came up against. And I think their personnel, again, if you look at man on man, there's not a lot of those English players you'd pick for Ireland. And like, that's a great way to start if you're sitting in the dressing room going through the names. But their backs against the wall. They need this win. They're in a World Cup cycle. Their World Cup cycle is always different to us. Here we go again, somewhat peaking a year out of a World Cup. When we beat them in 18 to win the Grand Slam, they went to a final in the World Cup after a fantastic game against New Zealand in the semi-final. That's where we need to be. So yes, this is a very, very important game. It's going to be a tough game. If we lose this game, it ain't over. Yes, the Six Nations is over, but the World Cup cycle is not over. And that's what we need to think about. And I think, you know, it'd be great to win it. And, you know, momentum going into next week as kind of the final weekend. But from an Irish point of view, I'd be disappointed with the selection, but we have to think of that bigger picture. So yes, for confidence, it's good to win. There's a tough summer ahead in New Zealand with three tests and a long road to the World Cup. But this game is not going to define us. You know, it's going to be a great game. It's going to be a big game. It's going to be a hard-fought game, but it's not going to define us. Yet, we can win it. We can definitely win it. But, you know, Pete, it's very easy to say, we beat England, and the bookies are saying it. I don't think it's going to be that easy to beat them.
Yeah, okay. You mentioned selection there, so talk to me about selection. Let's go with the backs. Personally, I was disappointed from a creativity point of view to see Bundy Aki in there. I know exactly why he's there. He's there for the physicality. He's there to try and bosh it up a little bit maybe, then bring on Henshaw. But I'd love to have seen Henshaw start alongside Ringrose and try and create something early.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's what we saw, you know, in previous games. We're looking at our side now that can, you know, has a couple of waves of attack after the first two phases. Now we're kind of showing our cards. And there's two points to make on this. In this Six Nations, we've somewhat shown how you can beat us, how you can beat Ireland. The French counter-rucked. They put our back line back on the back foot by counter-rucking, slow down a ruck ball. That's what the English have tried to do. But also in defence, we're kind of somewhat predictable to defend. So we're going to, the centres in England aren't as good. I see Elliot Davies on that bench. I would have started him. They're going to try and cut us off. So when Sexton takes turns to pass to the right or left, he's going to have an English man in front of him. Now, whether that English man is offside or onside, they won't care in the first 20 minutes. So with the likes of Aki, he's not going to pass as much. We're literally saying, as you said, we're playing the rough game here. We're playing route one by picking Aki. So in the selection, I think we've kind of shown our game plan, which is not something you want to do in any game, never mind against the English. And that's the one mistake, because we spoke about how good Farrell is going into the last two games and how he's called everything right. And you can see a trust building between players and coach and the dressing room. But in this selection, and him, and not only Aki, as I'm sure we talk about, I'm not saying he's panicking, but he's chopped and changed horses for courses. And we don't have the momentum going through this Six Nations campaign. It looks like he's stopped, he's hesitated, and he's made some decisions on that selection that will either, you know, make him a hero or make him zero. And, you know, they'll be the talking points after this game for sure.
He's had to make some other selections based on injuries. No choice in the matter. So Cian Healy coming in there in loose head. But Dan Sheehan coming in at hooker, and the line out against England is such a crucial area. Is this one you're a bit worried about?
Cian Healy, he's got all the experience. Yes, he's getting on in age, but as you get older, you lose consistency. So he has a game in him, definitely. You can't pull out the huge performances as you get older, but he would be well up for this game. I've no issue there. Yeah. The front row as a whole, going into the Six Nations, we probably had one of the best front rows in the world. That's not the case anymore. They'll definitely attack us there. And that's where the referee's interpretation comes into it. And that's the third issue today, is what way the referee's going to ref this game at scrum and breakdown. And if you consider Courtney Laws, who's a penalty machine, their captain, it tells you what they're going to be at. So the referee is going to have a huge influence in this game, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how it goes. But yeah, scrum time, I think the front row, it's unfortunate. Porter's really, really becoming a really world-class player in all facets of the game. I think the line-out, you know, this is where we... What's wrong with our line out? We had Rory Best for a decade. He retires. We've unearthed two of the best hookers in the game. Dan Sheehan came on in Paris, was outstanding. No reason to think why he won't be outstanding again today starting. It is a different scenario when you're starting in Twickenham as opposed to coming off the bench. Mm. But he has performed. So it's an area that England attack. Our line outs, Paul O'Connell has made a huge difference. They talk about picking Peter O'Mahony for the lineouts. That was a strange selection. I would have, you know, I don't understand that one. We had it. We spoke beforehand about the back row. We have the balance of the back row. We have three great players there, and the sum of their parts makes even a greater back row than we would have ever, you know, imagined, and then we break it up. So I don't get that part. I can see why he has picked Peter O'Mahony, because the leadership issue. He probably thinks there wasn't enough leadership shown against Italy when they were down to 13 and 12 men, but he was captain on that day. So that's kind of mind-boggling. That's one of the calls that will come back and haunt or not. It was a big call to have Conan on the bench. But I understand why he did it. I do get it. And you could call it bravery, you could call it panicking, you could call it, you know, hesitancy. We'll know at 7 o'clock tonight. You know, it's one of those games. but it's a brave call to make.
Well, the English back row is just such a force for them, you know, Curry, Simmons, and in particular Courtney Laws. They're the ones we have to fear most, but they're very physical players. They're very big, strong, physical players, and we're kind of giving away. Josh Van der Fleer is not in that ilk. He's more of the traditional, smaller, but incredible at getting in there and poaching ball. One of the old style sevens, you know. So he doesn't go into that big physical thing. But then we're like, we kind of need something to back that up a little bit. Now you have it with Caelan Doris, but would some people mention to me that either Conan, but even Henderson might have worked in that sixth role. I know he covers second row, but he could have worked in that sixth role just from a physicality point of view. Do you think we might be found caught out a little bit with the physicality by the English back row?
I've no doubt about it, we will be, because they're going to come at us hard, fast and low and repetitive and resilient the way they do. And Simmons has done this for Exeter week in, week out, and he does it for England. It's one of these calls, Reg, that there was something going on last year in the training park that we just didn't see. And there's fate put into players for a reason. And we'll see that this afternoon and hopefully it works out. But for me, the form back row was Conan, Van der Fleer and Doris. So you have the physicality in Doris, you've got the open side genuine in Van der Fleer, and you've got Conan, who has grown over the last couple of years into a fine player, had a fine lines, he was rewarded with lines after a season, and has continued in that form. I just don't understand why you break that up. It would be up to England to break up that back row, not ours in selection, you know. And again, it goes back, why do you break it up? Well, you got to break it up. Are you worried about the lineouts? Clearly. Are you worried about leadership? Yes, because again, you go back to that Italian game, there was no leadership. And anyone in the stadium at that game, any fan would be scratching their head going, what's going on in this game? It was the strangest game I've seen in a long time. And nobody stepped up to say, these guys have 12 men, let's change our game plan, let's change the way we play, and we put 80 points on them instead of 50. Mm. So why then after that debacle revert to, you know, we have a leadership problem, but you're picking players that played in that game, you know? So it's a strange one.
Yeah.
We're lucky we have that depth in the back row when you mentioned Henderson, you know, and Peter Mahoney and Roy Cohen and Bench. It's fantastic we have that depth. But I would have had O'Mahony coming off the bench with the leadership and the line of expertise, not starting, because we're a bit more transparent now. We have to ask the question, are we worried about the English? Are we lacking the momentum? Is there something in the Italian game that made us freeze? Or what's happening in the training park out in Maynooth? You know, so it's one of those, it's a strange one and plenty of debate on it. I wouldn't have done it myself. I don't think, you know, the bottom line at the moment, Peter Manny has been a great servant for Munster and Irish rugby, absolutely, but he's not better than the three players that are ahead of him in the squad. So why is he picked? And we're going to find out this afternoon whether that was a right call or a wrong call. But certainly a great debating point.
Yeah, well, hopefully it'll be the right call, because we desperately want to win this game. It's one of those ones, isn't it? The age-old battle, England versus Ireland, St. Patrick's, in or around St. Patrick's week. You know, it's what we love about the game, and it's what makes this Six Nations one of the best competitions in the world. There's no doubt about it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great day out. And in fact, it's a week now these days. You know, Cheltenham next week and Patrick's Day and various Irish, Anglo-Irish stuff going on over there. The game is almost like an incidental if you're living in London as an Irish person. But, yeah, you know, what an event. And Twickenham, you know, again, you look at last night, you look at Principality Stadium. You know, the passion, the tradition, the integrity of these games. I remember at that game in 2018, the English, when they were well beaten, you saw the fans who were singing Swing Low, turn around shaking hands with the Irish. They knew they were well beaten and they respected the great rugby played. No doubt it'll be the same again today. You know, it's hairs in the back of your neck, standing up stuff. It's fantastic, and another great game hopefully today. And what a Six Nations. You know, if Ireland do win it, then it comes down to next weekend. You know, that's what everyone wants.
Yeah, final question for you. Just an opinion, really. Andy Farrell, there was a lot of talk around him stepping up into that head coach position. Joe Schmidt had done so well over the past. We had COVID. He's had a lot to deal with. Have you been impressed with him as head coach? Has he done a good job?
I've been very impressed with him because, you know, he had to dismantle the Joe Schmidt era. So as good as it was, the Joe Schmidt era, it declined in the last year, and there was a fallout from that, and he had to dismantle that. He had to cope with the COVID. You know, if you think about the Italy game that was cancelled, he had no consistency at the start. And I think in that time, you know, he really upskilled the players. He's not afraid to take in coaches like Paul O'Connell, Mike Cash. He mixes up his own squad, but also his coaching ticket. I think he's been brilliant. And you can see that in the comfort of the players, particularly the new players, the young players coming in. But as I said to you, the only question would have been this selection. You know, these are big calls. And as I said, a lot for him is riding on that performance as to whether these calls are right or wrong.
GA, now we're going to be talking to Declan in just a moment. Last week, Dublin, you know, after a tremendous win against Tipperary and Thurles, the previous Saturday, they entertained Kilkenny last Saturday in the fourth game of this season's Alliance National Hurling League Division 1B campaign. And the Blues, they were unbeaten in 2022 prior to the game in Parnell Park with the Marble City men, but they came out on the wrong end of a 2-23-16 point scoreline. Declan caught up with Matty Kenny after the game. Let's have a listen to that.
Matty Kenny is with us here at Parnell Park. Well, after a tremendously successful start to the year, your first defeat, Matty, at home, what's your immediate reaction to it?
Yeah, look, a little bit disappointed with the overall performance. You know, we've put a lot of good performances together in the last 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks, and you know, tonight we just came up a little bit flat, and I think Kilkenny were really good value for their victory. You know, missed a number of chances in the first half, like, and you know, they allowed Kilkenny open up a bit of a lead and gain a little bit of momentum, and after half time then we came out, we kind of got ourselves back into the game, and you know, brought down to 3 points, and you know, I kind of thought it was game on then at that stage. I think it was 6-1 in our favour, and but then they got that goal, and I think you know, you know, 10 minutes in the second half, whenever it was, that was, I think, the decisive score. And in fairness to Kilkenny, they drove on from there. You know, they regained the momentum and drove for home. And in fairness to them, they're full value for their victory tonight.
Now, pre-match, you lost Donal O'Donnell, of course, which wasn't ideal for you. But you had something like 7 wides in the first half as well. It was like a repeat of what was happening in the first half in Semple Stadium last week to a large degree.
You know, we're playing well enough in that first half, and you know, our execution heads down, and Kilkenny were, you know, they're a team that you don't really want to give a 5 or 6 point lead, but look, that's the way it was. And in fairness to our guys, you know, the at half time they came back out and, you know, got themselves back into the game, got within 3 points. As I said, that goal then and a pint after, you know, stretched it out to 7 points, and you're satisfied. We're satisfied the way things are going. You know, but look at, you know, being at home tonight, you know, in front of our own crowd, we wanted to give a good performance tonight. And, you know, we just came up a little bit flat in the night. I said that execution in that first half kind of gave the momentum to Kilkenny. And that goal definitely in the second half time, you know, that they regained the momentum then and they drove for home. But look, you know, when we're winning, we're saying it's only the league. And yeah. Like, but look, it's a night like tonight, you know, they say sometimes you learn more from defeats than you do from victories. So look, at we'll go back, we'll look at the game over the next few days, and we'll get back to training and shoot.
Yeah, Declan, disappointed Matty Kenny there. You could hear it in his voice when he was talking to you. And after such a positive and encouraging run since the year started, it was really a disappointing loss to Kilkenny in the manner that they did lose.
Yes, indeed, Reg. Good morning to you. It's nice to talk to you again. Before we start, we should just wish our good friend and colleague Sean Lane every success. Sean has had a hip operation this week and is currently recovering. So we wish Sean well from everyone in Dublin's Talking Sport, and look forward to catching up with him fairly soon for his expert analysis of what's happening in the hurling. But yes, it was a disappointing night last Saturday evening, no doubt about it. As you say, they had beaten Tipperary impressively enough in Thurles the previous week. They were unbeaten in 2022. The graph was definitely moving upwards, but last week was a stalling thing really on it, you know, on the progression chart. And they will, as Matty said, they're, I'm sure, learn a lot more now from that defeat last Saturday. Similar to the Tipperary game in some respects, as he mentioned there, a lot of chances left behind them in the first half, and then the concession of the goal, the first goal particularly, killed them off in the second half. So
Sean and I have spoken about this before, the concession of the goal, the need to cut that out from their game, and that was evident again last Saturday. But yeah, look, one more game to go in the National League, away to Laois next Sunday afternoon in O'Moore Park. Now, the thing about it is that the qualification for the league semi-finals is out of their own control. Yes, they can beat Laois, but they will need Waterford to do them a favour against Kilkenny.
Yeah, but it's probably as much about getting that confidence up as anything else after losing to Kilkenny in that manner, a bit of a bounce back in terms of the championship, you know?
Yeah, no, that's ultimately what it's all about, and it's only 6 weeks away now, I think, you know. So, and the thing about it this year, thankfully, is that in many respects, although I'm more of a traditionalist myself and prefer the knockout system, but it's back to round robin, you know. So you have games coming at you thick and fast, but you're right, it is about building confidence, and that would have taken a bit of a dent after last Saturday. But again, Sean and I were talking, I think it was 2 weeks ago, about where we would be after these two games. We would be in a better position knowing where we are, and I think he certainly does that. He knows that now. He knows what's required over the next few weeks. It must be pointed out too that he's still short of four or five players who could certainly make a huge difference to that team through injury, and getting those back, hopefully maybe some of them even as early as next Sunday, would be a help.
Okay, football then. Let's turn our attention to that. It's a major talk of the conversation around the capital. There's no question about it. We're away to the All-Ireland Champions Tyrone in Omagh tomorrow afternoon, hoping to turn fortunes around. Four games lost, in serious danger of dropping out of top flight. Talk to me. Explain. Help us.
I wish I could, Reg. I wish I could. I mean, I'm taking phone calls from people I haven't spoken to in 6 years. Yeah. You know, that's the way it is from all over the country. What's going on in Dublin? What's going on in Dublin? Is Conn coming back, and this, that, and the other, you know? We're in a rut at the moment. There's no doubt about it. I talk about confidence in the hurlers after losing one match. I mean, we've lost four in a row. And if you look at our next three games, I mean, Tyrone away, the All-Ireland Champions tomorrow. We've done a goal at home in Croke Park next Sunday. A venue that we've already lost twice in the league this year, and then to finish off in Clonus, it doesn't get much tougher than that as you try and preserve your Division 1 status. And, you know, less than 12 months ago we were joint champions in the division, you know, so it's been such a turnover in players, everybody's aware of that, and it is certainly having an impact. But I thought against Kildare for a large degree the last day, Reg, there were some green shoots of recovery, particularly in defence when Mick Fitzsimons and Johnny Cooper were there. But our issue was at the other end of the field, really, you know. We scored 12 points, two of our forwards scored from play. And one of them, I'm glad to say, is Sean Bugler, who has really been a shining light so far in an overall very disappointing campaign, naturally enough. The Oliver Plunkett's own room and doing really well. Last time out, scoring 4 points. But we need more from more senior members of that inside line, and perhaps get one or two back as well. But listen, there's no tougher place to go to try and get any kind of results at any time of the year than Healy Park tomorrow. And that's the task that faces us.
Does the turnover of players argument stand up, though, Declan, to be fair? Because not too long ago, RTE pundits were calling for Dublin to be divided in two. There was that many good players apparently waiting to come in and take over and win All-Irelands at will. And, you know, I know there has been a turnover of players, but surely to God, there was a load of players waiting in the wings to just fill in those slots.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, talk of splitting Dublin in two has been absolute rubbish for years, and Euros kick points and all the rest of it, you know. You can replace, you know yourself, Reg, you can replace players on a team, right, and in a squad, right? That's no problem to do, but it's the quality of what they have. Now, look, let's be honest, we've been absolutely spoiled with the quality of players that we've had over the last 10, 11 years, right? Coming through the underage system, winning at underage, which I think is very important because of the confidence that it gives you going into senior level. We haven't had that kind of success for the last number of years at minor and under 20. We lost the cup at 20 final, and minors haven't performed too well over the last number of years. So the quality of player coming through is not the same. Now, look, these guys are good footballers, right? Obviously, they wouldn't be around the Dublin squad if they weren't, but they just don't have that little extra bit of the guys that are there at the moment. That's going to be a difficult thing to replace. It takes time to replace. It's the same in most team sports, and we've seen it with great teams in the past. I think of Kerry in the 80s. How long did it take them to win an All-Ireland after 1986? Kenny hurlers are struggling a little bit at the moment, although they are, I think, a little bit further down the line than what we are currently in the football. So it happens, but I think the key word here is patience, right? And I don't think a lot of Dublin people have the patience, to be honest with you. Reason being that if you're of a certain age in Dublin now, right, you don't remember Dublin losing All-Ireland finals or not contesting All-Ireland finals. I remember times when Dublin couldn't win a Leinster final, you know? So I've got a little bit more perspective on it, but that's just the way of the world. People want success and they want it now, but I mean, Desi's doing his best with what he has. Certainly he could do with the addition of one or two more, there's no doubt about that. And it's an interesting one in relation to Conor Callaghan, actually, because there's been a lot of speculation about him during the year, and he hasn't played for the footballers yet this year. And Matty Kenny was asked the question last week, was he coming to the hurlers? And there was no answer given to that particular question. So as long as questions like that remain, you know, we are going to have our issues with this team.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the ladies' football, because it's better news for the Dublin ladies' side. They qualified for the last four of the Little Ladies NFL Division 1. Victory over All-Ireland champions Mead down in Navan last Saturday. So they're making it 3 wins from 3 in the process, gaining measure of revenge for last September's defeat, I suppose, in the TG Carr All-Ireland final. So it's going well for the ladies.
It is, yeah. Small measure of success last week, or, you know, getting revenge for that defeat, as you say. 1-point victory. Hannah Tyrrell of Nafina kicking the winning score. They're back in the semi-final once again. They have Donegal now next Saturday up in Clonus in St. Tiernach's Park. So that'll be another tough game for them. But yeah, I think things are progressing nicely. A lot of new players around that squad, but they seem to have bedded in well. And very determined to take the opportunity that Mick Bowen has given them when he's handing them a jersey. So yeah, so far so good. Can't get much better than what it has, coming through the group unbeaten with 3 straight wins and back into the last 4.
Good stuff. Okay, Camogie, are they Dubs in action this weekend?
They are indeed, yeah. It's their third game in the Littlewoods National League. They travel to a place called The Rag. A good quiz question. Where in Ireland is The Rag? Well, the answer to that is, I've got you. Geography, not the strong point.
Well, university is the only thing that comes to mind. Some university somewhere, but other than that, I haven't a clue.
The answer is Tipperary. Okay. the Premier County is where they're off to this weekend. One win against Offaly the last time out, beat by Galway the week before. So they'll be looking for a good performance down there against a very strong Tipperary team this weekend.
Okay, good stuff. I can't believe that anywhere in Tipperary would be called The Rag. I won't have it. It's not allowed. Okay. Declan, as always, absolute pleasure chatting to you. We'll catch up with you again next week. Looking forward to hearing more on all the GAA. Cheltenham is coming up and it's going to be a hell of a festival as well. Always makes me feel good. Spring is in the air and we need some winners, so I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by the one and only George McDonough, who's been good with winners recently. How are you, George?
Very well, Reg, very well. Looking forward to a great festival, looking forward to racing today, and no more than yourself, looking forward to what could be a titanic clash in rugby this evening.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I mean, in Cheltenham, we've got 3 days to go before it kicks off. And, you know, we're looking at sort of a return to normality, I suppose, is the way you'd say it. Day one, starting on Tuesday the 15th, brings us right the way through to Friday. And I suppose, what's the big one? The champion hurdle, maybe, on day one?
Champion Ireland Day 1, Reg, Gold Cup will be a titanic clash. And I have to agree with you, the return to the crowds last year was a bit surreal. We've seen the arrival, I suppose, on the world stage. We all knew how talented Rachel Blackmore was here in this country for many years, but she arrived last year and stamped her authority on the festival and then went on, of course, and won the Grand National. It's one of the few sports where lads and girls, they basically ply their trade in the same field. And to see what Rachel Blackmore has done for ladies' sport, number one, but I think done for racing, has been unbelievable and won't it be fantastic to see. She's going to ride a couple of winners at the Cheltenham Festival. We're all hoping she rides Honeysuckle to win the Champion Hurdle, and the welcome she will get back into that winner's enclosure, I think anybody that's there will certainly, I think, cherish the moment, because it will be a seminal moment, I think, in the return to normality, especially for us lover of the horse racing game.
Absolutely, absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. Okay, so on Tuesday, we're looking at 7 races, I think, on the card on Tuesday. So, and you give us a bit of a blow-by-blow account. We'll go day by day, if that suits you, and just pick out some of the ones you really fancy.
We will, Reggie, and then finally, we'll hopefully get the expenses for the festival. We go with our Saturday Lucky 15 at the end of the chat. The first race, I think, Reg, is going to set the tone for the meeting. It's the Supreme Novices Hurdle, where at the moment, we don't know whether Willie Mullins will run Sir Gerhard or Dicer Dynamo. I don't think he won't run both. The people connected, the owners of Sir Gerhard, who I think is one of the bets of the meeting, irrespective of which race he turns up, the first race on Tuesday or the first race on Wednesday, they're leaning towards Wednesday. I'm hoping they go Tuesday, because I think this horse is very, very good. He was so impressive with winning the bumper at the meeting last year, ironically under Rachel Blackmore, had just joined Willie Mullins at that stage. 2 from 2 over hurdles, both at Leopardstown. Ultra impressive to me when winning the bumper last year, as I say. He's 2 hurdle runs. Some people have crabbed his jumble at the Dublin Racing Festival, but he made all in a Grade 1 contest. It was a huge step up in class over jumps for him. Put 3-stripe life to bed early in the straight, and back in behind them on that occasion, they had a horse called Colonel Mustard. Now, Colonel Mustard ran up against Constitution Hill and John Bond. Ran against John Bond at Ascot. John Bond is the big hope of the UK, Nicky Henderson, own brother to Duvan. The proximity of Colonel Mustard tells me that the Irish form is miles ahead. And so I think Sir Gerhard will win. If absent, if Dicer Dynamo turns up, I think a horse called 3-stripe Life, who was behind Sir Gerhard, would have an each-way chance. But it's hopefully for Sir Gerhard for me. Outside of Sir Gerhard, it's a more open contest if he doesn't run, and I've got to throw 3-stripe Life in each way. But I'm a huge fan of Sir Gerhard. The Arkell Chase and Edward Stone is the big hope of the UK. I think he will win. Curse Sublime is going to run in the contest now, we're told by Henry de Bromhead. Blue Lord and Revere d'Etat give Ireland a decent hand, I think. But I don't look no further than Edward Stone for me in that contest.
Good.
The Champion Hurdle. The Champion Hurdle is the one we want to see, Honeysuckle. In my honest opinion, it's a match between Honeysuckle and Appreciated. Appreciated, we haven't seen in a racetrack since last year's Supreme Novice Hurdle, the first race of the festival. Demolished his rivals, won by 14 lengths. Willie Mullins knows he has one crack at Honeysuckle, and he's thrown in Appreciated fresh. Will it work? Only time will tell. Tiofu is the only other horse that will get involved in my book from the Elliott's Yard with the Mount of Robbie Power. Impressive enough with winning at Goran Park. But Honeysuckle is the darling of all racing people at the moment. The mare, she won the Champion Hurdle last year in tremendous style. Appreciate will go out and try and make all. Rachel will sit off, turning for home. If Rachel and Honeysuckle are within 2 lengths of Appreciate, they'll do him for tow coming up the hill. And I think she'll win her second Champion Hurdle.
No, we are. That'll be great. Okay, are we on to Wednesday then?
On to Wednesday. Yeah. We're on to Wednesday, Reg, where again my friend Sir Gerhard raises his head, because if he turns up in the Ballymore Novices Hurdle on Wednesday, in my view, simply he will win. He's my bet of the meeting in the Novices, most definitely. The absence of Sir Gerhard in this makes it a wide open contest, and maybe Journey with me, who won comfortably enough at Nace in the Grade 1 Lawlers No Hotel Novices Hurdle and has won a maiden hurdle as well prior to that, would be the one to be on. But I think my view on the Ballymore is governed by where Sir Gerhard runs, to be quite honest.
Okay.
The Novices Chase is going to lack, we think, either Bob Ollinger or Gallopin Deschamps. They look set to clash in the Novices Chase on Thursday. Brave Man's Game is the big hope of Paul Nicholls' team, whilst Ahoy Senor comes down from Scotland, trained by Lucinda Russell, whose partner is Peter Scudamore, one of the great jockeys of National Hunt history and a great family steeped in the game. Brave Man's Game, not for me. I would throw in each way shout here on Lam Presse if he turns up from the Venetia Williams yard. The yard is a bit in and out, but I think this horse is potentially decent and will win a couple of big races in the future, but I would put him in as a shout there. The Champion Chase is the big race, Shishkin event against Anugerman. Once again, they met at Ascot, Shishkin won. Most people think he will win again, not me. I think Paul Townend on Anugerman might have been in the worst of the ground in the home straight at Ascot. I think certainly has a chance to reverse the form, but they could cut each other's throat out front. Jacques and Pursois doesn't like travelling to England, in my view. He's disappointed too often. So Nube Negra, second to put the kettle on in last year's renewal, might be the one each way in that running on at a place at a decent each way price.
Okay.
The bumper on Wednesday is the one we all love in Ireland. American Mike goes there with a huge reputation. And of course, Facile Vega is odds on favourite in some books, believe it or not, for this. But Willie Mullins also runs a horse called James's Gate. Ideally named, really, when they think the festival is coming up and what comes out of James's Gate. But he was ultra impressive in Punchestown on debut, having kind of bolted on the way to the start. But Patrick Mullins never moved a muscle and he went. Now, it's questionable what finished behind him, but I think potentially James's Gate could be a very good horse.
Good stuff. Okay.
To Thursday, Reg, yep. We have twin features. We have the Ryanair Chase, which looks at the mercy of last year's winner, Alaho. He just simply goes out, jumps every fence and runs his rivals into the ground. This is an ideal trip for him, 2 mile, 5 furlongs. The only fear I'd have is if he made a mistake anywhere in the way around, what's that going to happen? But he jumped so well last year, why we let him go again. Conflated is going to run here for the Ryanair operation, Michael O'Leary, Jingletown Stud, and Gordon Elliott and Davy Russell, rather than the Gold Cup. I think maybe he might have had a better chance to be placed in the Gold Cup, but of course the sponsor wants to run in his own race. But Alaho would want to have an off day, I think, for any of his rivals to beat him. The Stairs Hurl, Reggie, I suppose. Flooring Porter. No doubt you'll have a few quid on that yourself, mm-hmm. I hope. Galway Connections, you have yourself, Reggie, yeah. Owned by a syndicate in Galway and bred by a man called Sean Murphy, who actually was awarded Breeder of the Year at the Irish Thoroughbred Breeders Association Awards last week. Great success last year. And, you know, an emotional success. The lads were all here in Galway, couldn't be at the festival. Danny Mullins, his first Cheltenham Festival winner. Can he do it again? It was unlucky, I thought, at Leopardstown at Christmas. Classical Charm got the beat on the mall early and Paul Townend dictated. I think he's got a massive chance. Champ and Paisley Park for the English are decent, as is Time Hill. But I think the Irish will win this, and it looks a match for me between Flooring Porter and Classical Charm, with Flooring Porter's proven stamina swinging the call in his favour for me.
Excellent. Okay.
We move on to Friday then, Reg.
Yep.
The big day, of course, the Cheltenham Gold Cup. Couple of races also. The Triumph Hurl opens proceedings on that day, where I think the Triumph Hurl this year is a very, very good race. And Pied Piper from the Gordon Elliott yard is the one I want to be with all the way. Pied Piper was ultra impressive on debut in this country when beating Vauban, who's actually challenging for favourites, if not favourite in some books, for the Triumph Hurl for many people. I think Pied Piper is the better horse. He was a 92 rated flat horse in the UK. It was actually owned by the Queen, but they sold this horse at the sales. It might have been a mistake in my view.
Mm-hmm.
The way he won at Cheltenham in the trials day back in January was superb. They only jump a couple of hurdles in the last three quarters of a mile in the Triumph Hurl. So for me, his flat speed will tell and will be another winner at the festival for the great Davy Russell, who I think when we come to the blue ribbon, which we are now, the Cheltenham Gold Cup, Davy will also have a massive day. It's a very good renewal of a Cheltenham Gold Cup. There's so many unpredictables, there's so many views people can have on the race.
Yeah.
How it's going to be run. The view to many is that Ireland will win it. Last year, Manila Endo won it for Jack Kennedy, beat a Plutard. I think if a Plutard had jumped the last fence better, or the second last, should I say, would possibly have won the race.
Yeah.
Since then, a Plutard has come back and won at Haydock, and also was unlucky, maybe, was it at Christmas at Leopardstown, when possibly Henry's horses weren't in the best of form, but Davy was at his brilliant best on Galvin on that occasion. They'll run hard up front here, but Galvin will win the Gold Cup for the great Davy Russell.
Galvin, Gold Cup. Okay, we're going to take that one down. All right, George.
And do you want quickly yeah, our four horses, Reggie, for yeah, today's Lucky 15?
Do, give me
250 Daring Rocco at Navan. We're going for Daring Rocco there. 435 at Navan, we're going for Call the Tune. 3-10 at Goran Park, we're going for Junior B. And the nap of the four, Frenchie DeLarge in the 3:35 at Sandon. The first three of all each way shouts, big fields. And I think Frenchie DeLarge, only six runners, but at the price, he's a decent bet. And that's our nap, Frenchie DeLarge at Sandon. Enjoy the festival, Reg, and enjoy the game today.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.